The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Star Foundation, and the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at knightfoundation.org.
Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Am I middle class? Was I middle class? It was a confused mess when I grew up. Todd, I don't know about you. Todd Zwillick down in Washington and for Celeste Headley. Were you middle class when you grew up?
Hey, good morning, John. I've always considered myself solidly middle class, and I still do. But in a town like Washington, D.C., I think there's probably a lot of people who consider me upper class because of where I live.
You know, when I was growing up, we had a backyard that said middle class to me, but
yeah,
the neighbors had Stingray bikes, and my parents said no to that, and that said we weren't middle class.
Well, we had a backyard, but the kids who were our friends had Atari, and we were never allowed to have that, and so I assumed they were higher class than we were.
We had a VW bus for our four kids, but station wagons everywhere else, they were middle class, we weren't, but my dad worked for IBM, so that meant middle class for sure. It was a confusing mess. My parents never talked about money, so it was these symbols that deciphered what class we were in. Yeah. Of course, we're both white, and middle class was almost an automatic membership for people who grew up in the suburbs, as I did. Not the case for other groups in the United States, where the narrative of joining the middle class can be a longer one, can be a more arduous one, and can be a more fragile one, depending upon whether staying in the middle class is actually economically possible in these recessionary times. Joining us now to talk about perhaps newer members of the middle class or growing middle class communities in the United States, Chris Marsh is an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Maryland, joining us from Baltimore, Maryland. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
And William Michael Cunningham joins us, CEO of Creative Investment Research in Washington, D.C. Bill, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, too. How are you doing?
Great. Chris Marsh, let's talk about the circumstances that enabled the African-American population in the United States to begin joining the middle class. And what did those communities look like?
A lot of the work that I do talks about trying to understand how to define the black middle class. The black middle class is a unique group, and when you look at the sociological literature, scholars often use occupation, some might use income, some might use education, and some of the newer work looks at wealth or homeownership being a proxy for wealth. So in my research, I developed a black middle class index. So what I did was I tried to compare all black households relative to themselves to see those that have above average occupations and income of all black households. And I also wanted to look at those who were college educated as well as those who own their own home. And what I'm finding is that the black middle class, there's a compositional shift in the black middle class away from married couples to young black professionals who aren't married and don't have any children.
Interesting.
I think there's an underlying assumption that to be in the middle class, you have to be married with children. But if you look at the demographic literature, we know that people aren't marrying as much as they used to. In particular, blacks aren't marrying as much as they used to. So given that fact, we now see a shift away from married couples to young black professionals that are now making up a larger share of the black middle class.
Chris Marsh, let me play some cultural artifacts for you. You're a sociologist. You love this kind of thing. Here's something from 1984. I'm sure it'll be very, very familiar, and then something from about 20 years later.
Dad, you're a doctor and Mom's a lawyer, and you're both successful in everything, and that's great, but maybe I was born to be a regular person and have a regular life. If you weren't a doctor, I wouldn't love you less because you're my dad. And so instead of acting disappointed because I'm not like you, maybe you can just accept who I am and love me anyway because I'm your son.
Theo? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Chris Marsh, that's The Cosby Show, trying to show the portrait of the African-American middle class maybe 20 years ago. Is that accurate?
20 years ago, maybe. Now, no. And it's funny because the Huxtables are often thought of as the quintessential black middle class family. But if you even look at some of the media now, we see that they've moved away from these married couples to these young black professionals where they're not married, they don't have any children, and there's a growing share of the black middle class. That may have worked 20 years ago. I don't think that same depiction of the black middle class would work today.
Today, it's more like this.
Before I was a comedian, I thought the coolest thing that would happen to me was being a teenager. I was going to have women, money, stay out late. I thought it was going to be the bomb. Boy, was I wrong.
Chris! Get in the bathroom and wipe the pee off the toilet seat!
It's from Everybody Hates Chris, you know, talking about a much later generation, a subsequent generation to the Huxtables. Is the go-it-alone mentality of benefit to the African-American community trying to be in the middle class?
There are some pluses and minuses to doing it alone. One thing that you have to think about, if, again, with my research, we're finding that you have people that are single and living alone, that are owning their own homes, that are solid middle-class members. But the larger question becomes, who are they going to transfer their wealth to?
Right.
If they do not have children, who are they going to bequeath their house to?
Interesting.
So that's kind of like the larger question, the intergenerational transference of wealth is a question that becomes both interesting and very intriguing for the future for the black middle class.
Chris Marsh, thanks so much. Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Maryland. William Michael Cunningham, CEO of Creative Investment. What has this recession done to the idea of transference of wealth or the numbers of African Americans who have managed to maintain their status in the middle class?
Well, certainly it's damaged the pool of wealth that is transferable. If you think about the concepts that we're talking about, wealth is like a lake. Income is like water coming out of a hose. And the problem is that the lake is shallower now. There's less water in the lake, less wealth that people have. And the hose is not the water pressure on the hose is in trouble, too, because income, as we know, has dropped also. Part of the issue for African Americans is that in a lot of cases, they've been targeted by specific financial institutions who have looked to extract water out of their lake, looked to extract wealth from these communities. And I'm referring to the lawsuit in the state of Maryland filed against Wells Fargo for targeting African American communities, Prince George's County specifically, get people in those communities to take out subprime loans even when they were qualified for prime loans.
Right, right. Well, the indebtedness in the African-American community plus the difficulty of home ownership has really removed one of the significant markers, home ownership, and Chris Marsh referred to that a moment ago, as a sign of being in the middle class. William Michael Cunningham, CEO of Creative Investment Research, thanks so much. Also, thanks to Chris Marsh, Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Maryland. Thanks to both of you.